Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Mully and Hall. Live and local. Chicago Sports Talk for your morning on 670 The Score.
Funny you said that watching Tim reminds you of watching Mookie Betts. Is that just from a standpoint of some of the things they can do that so many others cannot?
Well, part of it is what they can do, but there's other, you know, there are the great defensive outfielders, the other great defensive infielders, other guys that look like when they go to bat, they're going to get a hit every time. It's just their grace, man, their athletic skills. They like flow and move, and they have an athleticism that's very special. And a lot of other great players have skills, but their movements are, you know, my daughters are used to be ballet dancers, you know, I mean, they like dance out there, and it's very, very, they're great to watch. So great to watch now, spring training. I'm glad Mookie's in the other league.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That's the voice of Tony La Russa. I think he just called Tim Anderson and Mookie Betts his daughters. Ballet dancers? No. We're delighted to welcome in Lamont Pope. He covers the White Sox for the Chicago Tribune. And the Score Hotline is presented by Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park on North Avenue or apford.com. Lamont, how are you?
Hi, Lamont.
Good morning. I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
We're all fired up because it's baseball season. We're getting to kind of see the beginnings of it. And maybe, just maybe, we'll see an actual pitcher who could actually perform this year when Lucas Giolito takes the bump. I've been watching all these guys come flying through my TV screen, and I'm like, who's that guy? Wait a minute. Ryan Burr, I remember him, but that was a couple years ago. It is just, it is hard to get a feel on how good this pitching staff is if we're not going to see any of the guys that actually are going to pitch.
Yeah, we're going to get the chance to see Lucas today. And on Thursday, they're going to have a number of the guys lined on up. We'll get Lance Lynn, Liam Hendricks, I think Cody Hoyer as well. And so slowly but surely, we're going to get to see some of the guys that are going to be some of the mainstays in the rotation and out of the bullpen. And so a good start, you know, today with Lucas, and get a chance. You know, we've obviously had the chance to see him throw some live batting practice, but to actually see them against another team, that's going to be a good thing to see starting today.
You know, Lamont, whether it's Tony La Russa comparing Tim Anderson to a baseball Baryshnikov or looking at Michael Kopech, his impressions have been coming from a place of, it's almost like a novelty. He's seeing these guys for the first time, and we're experiencing his opinions and kind of enjoying it here. And so when you have been around him and when you hear him on a daily basis, what stood out to you about the consistency that he has talked with, or just the kind of the fresh eyes that he has kind of brought to Glendale with him?
Yeah, I think it's one thing for him to be able to see the guys on film or watch them in the past, but to actually see them in action, see them how they do everything on a day-to-day basis, it's been refreshing for him, and it's been refreshing for us to kind of get a new taste and new perspective on what the guys bring. I mean, it's all across the board, from Tim Anderson, Crochet, and from Kopech. And so we're getting a chance to see what he sees from these guys, you know, from a Hall of Famer's perspective, right out of the gate. And, you know, the one thing that's also from the guys' perspective, I thought one of the questions entering spring camp was just going to be how the players adapt to Tony as well. And it seems like they've really meshed with him early on, and they've really liked how things have been going. And so it's been one of those situations where the players are getting a feel for Tony, and Tony's also getting a feel for the entire roster as well.
How different is it than Rick Renteria? I mean, Tony has obviously a lot more gravitas when he arrives. Rick Renteria was, you know, a good guy, maybe put into a difficult situation. You know, a guy that came in and whether he wanted Coop or not, Coop was his guy, and now you got Tony coming in and you got a new pitching coach. You got new people all over the place, and you feel like they are going for it, which you never got the sense with Rick, even when they kind of arrived last year a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's the important thing. I mean, just you enter camp. You know, last year there was a belief that the team was ready to make that jump to become a playoff contender. Now the spotlight, and the guys haven't shied away from the fact that they want to be a World Series champion. They expect to be a team that's competing for the World Series. And so just, you know, entering camp from that perspective, it's different. One thing that the team that I've noticed right out of the gate, they're doing a lot more live batting practice. And so the guys are getting a taste of some live pitching right out of the gate. You know, Jose, he showed up on Saturday, and he was in the box facing Zach Birdie, you know, had one pitch zoomed by his head almost. And so right out of the gate, you know, these guys are getting a little more competitive from that standpoint. You know, usually – I remember last year it took a little while longer for them to kind of get into that rhythm of doing those live batting practice sessions. And so you're getting, you know, a little more of that competition, a little more of that juice. We saw, we had a couple of inter-squad games as well, leading up to the start of the Cactus League season. And so just kind of getting the feel for, you know, having that rhythm of being on the field, getting some at-bats and things of that nature right out of the gate. Whereas last year, like I said, it was sort of a little more of a slower ramp on up to the start of the season.
Lamont, you check in this morning in the Tribune with a story and a note about a guy that nobody really talks about but is always there, Lourie Garcia. And I had to read this twice, and I had to double-check. Not that I was questioning you, but, like, he's been with the White Sox since 2013. You know, this is a guy who you look at like, okay, yeah, every season Lourie Garcia is on the roster playing a role and being as versatile as anybody that they have. What's his role this season moving forward? And do you think he's in a position where do we take him for granted, the fact that he offers the Sox as much as he does?
Yeah, when I had the chance to chat with him on a Sunday morning, you know, I had him run on down all the positions that he's been working at. And he said third base, shortstop, second base. And then he paused and was like, not first base yet. But then he started on with the outfield as well. And so here's someone who can just do a little bit of everything. And he's going to be sort of that super utility player as well. Because you take a look at the roster and the way it's set up right now, there's not a ton of depth. You know, if Tim Anderson gets injured, you know, he spent some time on the injured list last year. Lourie Garcia stepped in to fill that void. And he was performing really well. And then when Tim came on back, Tim came back sort of the same time when Lourie went on out with his thumb injury. And so he was out for, you know, most of last season, and then he came on back for the playoffs. And they right away in the playoffs, they stuck him in left field because of Eloy Jimenez's injury. And so here's someone who can kind of – you need someone to play second base for a day to give Nick Madrigal a rest. You can play Lourie Garcia there. You need Yoan Moncada to get a day off. Lourie can play there. You need you want Eloy to DH today. Lourie can play there. And so here's someone who can just do a little bit of everything, and, you know, he's a switch hitter and can kind of impact the lineup from that standpoint. At the bottom of the lineup, more likely. But yeah, he's someone who's very versatile and can really help the team out in several ways.
So I keep looking at their pitching staff, and I keep thinking about, you know, we know the top three. We know that Dylan Cease is kind of the fourth guy, and then I guess it's Rodon who starts out fifth, but we think there'll be multiple players that get starts before the season's up and done. Then we look at the bullpen, and especially if you got Kopech and Crochet in that bullpen, I don't know how many pitchers you're keeping, and I don't know how you're going to do the math on that. If you're keeping 13 pitchers, seems like they're going to have some good pitchers that might not be a part of this thing to open the season. And they keep throwing guys out there for the first couple of games, so I'm thinking to myself, is there depth here? Are they looking to showcase for trades eventually? Or is it just so many guys didn't have a minor league that you're trying to give everyone an opportunity to start? It just seems like there's a lot of obvious pitching decisions that have already been made, and they're going to have a crunch at that. The bullpen looks awful good.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. I totally think that, you know, for the most part, the rotation is pretty much set. And, you know, obviously, like, except the fifth spot, it's either going to be Rodon or Lopez. And they can both maybe kind of get into that mix a little bit as it goes along. You know, with Michael starting out in the bullpen, with Garrett, you know, his long-term goal is to have Crochet as a starter. But this year, he's probably going to be more in the role of a multi-inning reliever. And so you have, you're spotting these guys into these positions, and there really doesn't seem to be that many sort of open spots available. But yeah, you know, the fact that there wasn't a minor league season last year, the fact that, you know, some of these guys did get the chance to continue to develop in Schaumburg, but some of these guys did not. And so now they're getting the chance, the opportunity to face some live, live hitting for the first time in almost a year. And so I think that's kind of the mindset with getting some of these guys some work here in these early spring training games. But yeah, the rotation's pretty much set. You know, you want to see what kind of development and what kind of steps that Dylan Cease can make working with Ethan Katz. And then, you know, again, Ronaldo Lopez, he's someone who spent, Katz said the other day that Ronaldo spent some time working with Johnny Cueto in the offseason. And so let's see what steps he's sort of made. And then with Rodon as well, can he stay healthy throughout the full season? I mean, that's something that's been bugging him for a number of years, you know, the fact that he hasn't been able to stay healthy. And so, and, you know, with Kopech, you know, here's someone who hasn't obviously pitched in a major league game since 2018. And so you're going to kind of take some time, make sure that he's ready, make sure he's all the way ready before kind of throwing him in on a night or, you know, on a weekly basis, things of that nature.
With promising rookies, Lamond, I think it's easy to project, or I think easier to project them having success, like Andrew Vaughn. Everyone says he's going to hit, and when you watch him at the plate, you understand what they're basing that optimism on. And I think sometimes their season, the course of their early career is dictated not by can they succeed, but how they handle failure. And I just wondered, in dealing with him and talking to him or talking to other people about him, what it is about his personality that makes you think or project that he's going to be able to do that, to get through those rough patches that inevitably will come and allow his talent to take over, and he doesn't have to kind of let the, you know, failure paralyze him to the degree that it does with some young guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're exactly right. I think the fact that he's really grounded in the chances that we've had the chances to talk to him. But there are going to be times, you know, it's going to be an up and down sort of situation. And I think the fact that there's so much talent around him, you know, there's not going to be as much of a pressure on him to kind of step into that designated hitter role right out of the gate and produce at a high level. You know, when you have guys that you're expecting, you know, you're expecting Yoan Moncada to bounce on back after his 2020 was impacted severely by COVID. You expect to see, you want to see what Luis Robert can do over a full season. You know, here's someone who got off to such a great start last year, but then had such a bad September for the most part. But then he was able to kind of rebound that last week, and he was able to carry it over into the postseason. So you want to see what he can do a full season. You want to see what Nick Madrigal can do for a full season as well. And so you're projecting Luis able to take that next step. You're projecting Nick Madrigal being able to take that next step. And so it's going to put a little less pressure on Andrew Vaughn to have to be that guy that can kind of, you know, contribute a big thing out of the gate as far as it designated hitter spot is available. But I think, you know, as you said, you know, there's going to be some ups, there's going to be some downs, but here's someone who, by all accounts, you know, when he steps in the box, he can do some damage, and that's going to be something that's going to be very helpful for this lineup.
Yeah, I told David after watching that first game, Lamond, that I was, you know, very hopeful for the Sox because they were going to play these young players. You know, it was no longer, hey, hang on to them, let's worry about service time. No, it's Andrew Vaughn's going to be the DH. We're going to have Crochet and Kopech in the bullpen. We're, you know, there was no more messing around or worrying about service time. And then with Vaughn in particular, I mean, how often is it you see a Sox player actually willingly take a walk? The guy's giving you a walk. Okay, I'll stand there and take it. I these are things you don't see from the White Sox. So I was very encouraged.
Yeah, I mean, you take a look just over the last couple of years, obviously, you know, you sign Eloy to that big contract and get him in there for opening day. You sign Robert to that big contract and get him ready for opening day. And so those are those young guys that have that experience right out of the gate of getting, you know, pushed on up into the majors and being able to see if they can succeed and learn from that standpoint. And I think that really helped in, you know, Eloy's case in 2019, getting that experience, because I thought in 2020 he did make that leap, and he was a much improved player from that standpoint. And I'm really excited just to sort of see what's that next step going to be for him, because I think he's a guy that one day can be in that MVP sort of conversation. Obviously, we've seen Robert and just sort of all the tools that he has, but, you know, and then that August that he had was just, you know, phenomenal. He was sort of, you know, lived up to that hype from that standpoint. But then September, as I said, you know, had a really terrible September. But showed some signs there, and then you hit that blast there in Game 3 of the AL Wildcard Series. And so having the chance to see some of these young guys, and you mentioned Crochet. I mean, here's someone who started 2020 as a Tennessee Volunteer. And then he's thrown in there in Game 3 of the playoffs series. He's the first guy out of the bullpen, and so these young guys have gotten opportunities and on big stages to kind of contribute, and so that's a situation where Andrew, you know, he can look at that and say, you know, they've shown the trust in these guys, and not only playing these guys but playing them in big stages, and so that's going to be something that can give them some confidence as well.
Lamont, thanks for your time. We appreciate it, buddy. Great catching up.
Thanks, Lamont. Good stuff.
Thanks, guys. Anytime.
Take care.
You know, I keep wondering if what's the guy's name? Yolkis, Cespedes. You know, the younger brother.
Yeah,
brother
yeah.
of Cespedes. I keep Ooh. Wondering. You know, they announced him and they've signed him. He's like 23 years old. Everyone says he's the most major league ready ball player. I just wonder if they're going to have other guys here, David, that maybe we didn't count on or expect that could come in and make an impact somehow without seeing them a heck of a lot in the early part of the season here.
Well, much like you don't have to put as much pressure on Andrew Vaughn, I don't think you have to rush guys like Cespedes because you have other players that are maybe ahead of him, but you can just wait to see how he develops, adjusts, and acclimates. But that is somebody they probably will emerge, you know, if he gets the bats he needs and develops as they project. He could be a factor down the stretch. You just don't know.
I thought we decided the rush is on, that there is this gold to be had with the White Sox, and everyone that can come needs to get their donkey and to get in line and buy some blue jeans and start hunting for that gold.
Well, I think we call them parallel tracks, and I think tracks to success. One developmental and one chasing the pennant. So there you go.
Just got it. Got to get to it. Got to get to it quickly. Got to get that championship. It's important. How do you win multiple if you don't start with one? We'll debate that next. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
You're listening to the number one sports morning show in Chicago, Mully and Haw. But now you can watch the show live on Twitch. Just search 670 The Score on twitch.tv or on the Twitch app. Check it out now. This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Alex Smith was one of the best stories in the NFL this year. Comeback player of the year. It was so cool to see him out there. But this is where the story ends for the Washington football team. And guys, you want to talk about a potential place he could land? I mean, obviously, you're going to have teams interested if he wants to play. I would keep an eye on the Chicago Bears simply because of Matt Nagy. His, obviously, role there as the head coach, the former coach for Alex Smith at Kansas City. They still need a quarterback, would make some sense.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That's Ian Rappaport. He is on the NFL Network there. It seemed like somebody was talking in the background, but he was telling you that Alex Smith to the Bears. Yes, let's all get on board. Maybe not.
Well, get on board. Be careful where you step because you don't want to hurt anything, and you want to be very cautious if you're helping Alex Smith on board. Look, that's just the reality of a guy with 17 surgeries who was the comeback player of the year and was the easiest guy in the NFL to root for in 2020. But look, if you're a head coach, if you're a general manager in the NFL and your job is on the line based on how many victories you have in 2021, I don't know that this is a guy I want to turn to as my starting quarterback. I just believe you've got to have better options. He's very good insurance. He'd be a very expensive backup, but I think you already got one of those guys. You got one of those guys under contract to Nick Foles.
Do you think if they did bring in Alex Smith that it wouldn't be very long from the time he first got to the field to the news conference where they told us that Matt Nagy hadn't really ever called plays for him and they had to learn that together and they were going to –
No.
I think we've been through this. We've been down this road. And again, would the guy wear 17 for his surgeries or 18 anticipating the next one? I hate the idea of going to a guy like that when you have obviously the possibility of going in a different direction. And I know you don't seem to like the Fitzmagic idea, and I'm not on board necessarily. It is different. The problem with a guy that's going to go for it, as we've heard about him, is that he's going to come up short at times. I mean, he can put together a great passing game and he can have his day, but I don't know. Is that really the answer?
Mully, again, in Ryan Fitzpatrick, I see a quarterback that can help you win and can be the solution if your problem is you need a guy to get you through a 3 to 5 to 7 game period. I get that. But he falls under the category, again, to me, that stopgap quarterback in Chicago because he couldn't land anywhere else and they're desperate. And that would be why he is here. And I also think that you do, again, have a quarterback here in Nick Foles that fits a lot of the same criteria. And I just don't know if Ryan Fitzpatrick brings you closer to saving your job if you are Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy. It may be the best of a bunch of bad solutions, but it doesn't make you excited that 2021 you're headed to the playoffs. It just doesn't for me.
All right, let me just throw some names at you, and these are franchise names, all of whom apparently need a quarterback or are searching for a quarterback. And you tell me the team more or less likely than the Bears to get a quarterback. The Jags.
They're getting Trevor Lawrence.
The Jets.
They're going to be in a great position. They're either going to get the second quarterback in the draft, which could be Zach Wilson. You know how much I like him. Or they're going to trade for Deshaun Watson.
The Eagles.
They got their guy. That's why they traded Carson Wentz. They've got Jalen Hurts. They feel very comfortable there.
I think they're drafting one. I think they're going to be one of the teams that drafts a quarterback high. I don't think Jalen Hurts is the answer, and I don't think they got rid of Carson Wentz because of Jalen Hurts. How about that?
March 2nd.
Yeah.
Mully goes big on draft prediction. I like that idea because you know how I feel about Jalen Hurts. I think he's a tremendous talent.
Yeah.
I don't think I would have mortgaged my future on the fact that he has looked exciting in 4 games. I think that's a huge risk. I love that prediction.
Carolina.
Oh, they are either going to go hard after Deshaun Watson if he's available, or they're going to draft one.
We got to argue about Deshaun Watson then, because I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. Denver.
They would like to move on from Locke. Good luck with that. But I think they could also be one of those I think they could draft a quarterback. I think that's 4 teams that
how about
draft
this
a quarterback.
One? The New England Patriots. They've never, repeat never, drafted a quarterback in the first round under Bill Belichick. Never. Isn't it time?
This is going to be crazy. It's going to sound crazy, but I don't think that Belichick will consider quarterback a position that has enough value to draft where he's drafting. I think he will look someone away from the ball.
15? And there's probably not going to be a guy at 15. He'd probably have to get on his horse, right?
Probably so. I don't think they take a quarterback.
You say no first-round draft pick quarterback.
Not for the Patriots, no.
Well, I'm pretty sure, if I'm not mistaken, that the evidence would be in your favor, given that they've never done it before.
So right.
You're not
the
reaching.
Trend is your friend.
That's
yes.
Right. Washington football team.
They better be drafting a quarterback or thinking that way or using it as leverage or being in the Sam Darnold mix or somebody like that. They're similar to the Bears. Now, if you say goodbye to Alex Smith, who provides quality insurance and knows the organization, you better have a plan.
You know, I think Washington, the Bears, and Denver are similar, in their like needing of a quarterback. And I hate to say this, I think it might be Denver and the Bears more so than Washington. I don't think Chico gets fired if they don't get a quarterback. I think that the Bears could be fired, and I think Vic could be fired.
It's a good comparison, and I would agree with that assessment. There's no way Ron Rivera is getting fired. He is coming off the he had a tremendous year in Washington, and so Vic Fangio and Matt Nagy, they not only used to work together, now they know what it feels like to be on the hot seat together.
All right, and then finally the Saints.
The Saints are not going to get Russell Wilson. I can't imagine the Seahawks would trade to a team that would make it harder to get to the Super Bowl. They are in a better situation quarterback-wise because if Drew Brees finally does retire, I guess he must be crafting his speech.
It's taking a while.
Jameis Winston is going to be their starter, and he is probably going to be erratic, but they also have Taysom Hill there. They have an embarrassment of riches at the quarterback position.
So just to go over the list one more time, and let's just look at the coaches real quick. Jags, Jets, Eagles, Carolina, all new coaches. Washington, relatively new coach, same as Carolina. And then the coaches that could be looking for a quarterback that don't have that kind of can't just rely on being new. Denver, New England, the Saints, and the Bears.
And the Bears of those teams are drafting in a position that you're not going to get somebody that you feel like is going to be better than the fifth or sixth quarterback at the position.
20th,
so
yeah.
if you get Mac Jones at 20th and you sign Alex Smith to be your bridge guy and you've got Nick Foles holding a clipboard for $7 million a year or whatever you're paying him, is that something that makes you feel like you have answered the question that's lingered this offseason if you're the Bears? I don't know. I don't think it tells me that this is a 10-win team. Or if it's 17-game season, do they have to be an 11-win team, Molly? Do we change our criteria there, too?
It's a good point. I mean, seriously. And the Bears, by all accounts, their extra game, the 17th game, is against the Raiders in Vegas. Vegas, baby. Let me just tell you this. Even if they lose that game, it won't matter because what happens there will not even be reported.
It won't be recorded. No, I know. And they're likely to forget it by the time they fly home.
That's
anyway.
Right. That's right.
And they will never tell their wives about that game anyway, either.
Oh, boy.
Vegas, baby.
Yeah.
You know, it's all a problem, as Foxy would like to say. That's why you don't want to go into the draft. You never want to go into the draft in a position not only of need, but desperate need, because you're always going to have needs that you want to address. But when you're dealing from a position of desperation, the way that several of these teams are when it comes to the quarterback position, that's going to be something that, you know, they feel in Carolina about Teddy Bridgewater, I think the way that Chicago does about Nick Foles. So that's why they feel that sense of desperation. I also think that you could go down the list and have a similar sort of appeal. You got a lot of desperate teams that are going to feel compelled to take a quarterback and overdraft at the position.
It's fascinating. It really is. I mean, I you look at the list of quarterbacks, and I get it. I understand the difference between need and value. But, I mean, God, you're trying to create players. This is always the danger in a draft where, you know, you're going to overdraft positions of need. Everyone's going to claim, well, we always take the best player available. And then no matter what happens, they take the player at the position they need, and then they do their mock high five of each other and say, you know, we can't believe it worked out so well for us where our absolute position of need happened to be there. And as a result, you end up kind of overdrafting guys. You create players that might not be there. There could be a hint of this or that, and you see something that you can fall madly in love with, and you end up making a decision that's going to bite you. There's no way that there are five first-round worthy quarterbacks coming out of the same draft class.
No way.
It doesn't mean there can't be five that actually work out, But I just think it's teams kind of pushing up and trying to get something. And frankly, what the role you want to be in, you want to be the team that doesn't need a quarterback so that then you can pick somebody that has fallen probably three or four spots that they shouldn't have, only everybody needed a quarterback.
And you get a great player. And that happens a lot.
Yep.
Of the teams that you mentioned, of the teams in the top 10, which team, if any, is most likely to – let me rephrase the question. Are any of the teams that you mentioned, do you think, compelled to show interest in Mitch Trubisky as a free agent quarterback with experience who might be a bridge guy, who might be in competition with your incumbent as somebody that you would want to bring into your organization?
Not the Jags. I don't think the Jets. If they make a decision to keep a quarterback, it'll be Darnold.
Eagles?
I don't think the Eagles. Carolina? No. Would they be interested in Mitch? Teddy Bridgewater to Mitch?
I have a hard time seeing that as clear-cut progress.
Here's the one. Here it is. You ready? Denver.
Well, that's what went through my mind. You know, you do have Vic Fangio,
yeah,
who's familiar with the intangibles that Mitch Trubisky offers, which have always been his strength. You've got a system in Denver offensively with Shurmur that is adaptable and pliable, and you could think of a guy that could be playing to the strengths of a Mitch Trubisky. That's the team, I think, of all the ones mentioned. And the other one that I thought is intriguing is New England. New England and Denver are the teams that, if I'm Mitch Trubisky's agent, I'm tampering legally or illegally, however you want. Successfully, let's say it that. Successfully.
Can you legally tamper?
No, you can't. No, you can't. You really can't. But I'm looking into those two situations because I'm trying to sell them on the idea, hey, this is a guy that is a good teammate, is a solid locker room guy, and he needs a change of scenery, and see what they think.
I'd be on the phone with Denver, and I would say, hey, listen, the opponent's going to be gassed because of the high altitude. Mitch, once he gets used to it, he'll be running around. He'll be running circles around people. This is me as the salesman. It's why I've never sold anything successfully.
Why didn't you become an agent again?
I'll go four teams out of this group of nine. Denver, the Patriots, in a weird, funny mirror way, Washington. I don't know why. They got to get someone. The music's playing. Who are they going to land with? They've actually gotten rid of a guy. And then the Bears. Why not throw the Bears in?
Well, I would definitely, and I'm going to stay consistent, the Bears need to leave the door open ajar, just a crack, because Mitch Trubisky returning to Chicago, if you strip feelings away, you don't worry about the sentiment and all the other things about PR, if you look at the quarterbacks available, you can't tell me that the options are that much better than the guy who was your quarterback when you had this miraculous recovery from the six-game losing streak last year.
They don't need to leave the door open ajar. They need to open the jar and adore Mitch.
See, that's when you have backspace, you can hit it. I know I was redundant there. It's just when you leave the door ajar. When is the door ajar?
Why don't you adore? That's the bigger question. That's Mitch's agent. All right, we'll get to Mike Florio next. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station. Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, NBC Sports, Twitter.com/ProFootballTalk.
He's our game! He's our game! We get better, bet!
We get better,
bet!
We
get
better,
bet! We get better, bet! NFL Insider, Mike Florio.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We love our opportunity to talk to Mike Florio, and The Score hotline is presented by Al Pamani Ford in Melrose Park on North Avenue, or apford.com. Michael, good morning. How are you?
Morning, Mike. Great. How are you guys today?
I haven't gained my footing after finding out that J.J. Watt had signed in Arizona. I swooned a little. I fell down. I got up. I just didn't know if I was coming or going. What the heck is that about?
Are you saying you had the vapors?
It would seem so.
Well, I think what happened is this, plain and simple. You can chase a ring or you can chase the coin. And the problem with chasing a ring, there are too many factors, too many variables, too many unknowns, too many uncertainties that go into that end result of emerging with a Lombardi trophy in your hands for all eternity and a ring that goes onto your finger and is passed down to your children and their children, and it's always part of your legacy. When you go after the money, there's no uncertainty. You're getting the best money that's out there. And it's funny now to see after the fact some of the Arizona people who are in the media suggesting that other teams were offering as much or more than Arizona, and other reports saying, no, Arizona was by itself. I think Arizona was by itself. I think that's why J.J. Watt takes Arizona, because Arizona is not a team that we look at and say, hey, there's a contender. I mean, hell, they were third place in their division last year. And when you look what the Rams have done, and if the 49ers just manage to stay reasonably healthy, they're third place again, and maybe fourth place if the Seahawks can get it together. So this is J.J. Watt chasing the bag, and there's nothing wrong with him chasing the bag, because that's the only certainty when it comes to the NFL, when you've got all those different factors that influence whether or not a team ultimately wins.
Mike, I don't know if you have yet to consult with Brandon Marshall, but what is the latest with Russell Wilson and his passive-aggressive trade request from the Seahawks?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's aggressive-aggressive. When your agent comes out and says, my client doesn't want to be traded, he wants to play in Seattle, but in the event he were traded, here are the four teams that he would play for. Nothing has really happened since then. There's been no reporting that would definitively link any of these four teams to the Seahawks. There's been some reporting that would suggest the Cowboys aren't going to do it. And for the Cowboys, it's too many moving parts. You can't trade Dak Prescott. The Seahawks can't take on that one-year franchise tag number of $37.6 million. It just doesn't work for the Cowboys. And whatever they'd have to give up to get Russell Wilson, by the time they recover from that, too many years will have gone by, and Jerry Jones is on a clear year-to-year effort to try to win a Super Bowl. But for the other three teams, Bears, Saints, Raiders, it makes sense to explore. It makes sense to inquire. It makes sense to call up the Seahawks and, you know, instead of making them an offer, just say, what do you want? Tell us what you want, and we'll see if it's something that we can do. We'll see if it's something that we can meet. We'll see if it's a reasonable starting point and we can negotiate to something that works for both sides. And I think it'd be crazy for the Bears not to do it. What are the Bears' options? At least look into it and see if there's something there. I think the Bears should be thrilled that Russell Wilson's interested in playing for them. And when you consider what else there may be at quarterback, how do you not at least explore to see what's out there? So I think it'd be ludicrous to think that these teams that were identified by Mark Rogers haven't internally discussed it and potentially contacted the Seahawks. And, you know, there's been nothing from the Seahawks slamming the door on it like the Texans have tried to do with Deshaun Watson. I think that the Seahawks realize that they need to listen, because maybe they'll get offered something that they can't refuse. And that was my big takeaway from the Athletic article last week about Wilson and the Seahawks. If the Seahawks don't view Russell Wilson the way that Russell Wilson views Russell Wilson, they should just trade him to a team that does, because that team will offer more than what the Seahawks would think Russell Wilson is worth.
Yeah, we said it the morning after that story came out that, you know, not only would Russell Wilson become an icon and a cult figure here in Chicago if he came here, just by putting him on the list, he's that, right? Already Bear fans are going crazy about it and just delighted that he included the Bears on a list. So if they actually got the guy, I shudder to think what could happen. Now, it seems more likely that they'll get an Alex Smith type. And that's been mentioned prominently, this idea that Alex Smith is available and he has a relationship with Matt Nagy. And we saw last year they traded for Nick Foles because he was available and he had a relationship with Matt Nagy. Now, they don't have to trade this year, but isn't that more of the same? And with all due respect, and you have to be careful about what you say with Alex Smith, because it's an extraordinary story, I wouldn't want him here. I would not want him here.
When I watch Alex Smith play, I feel like I did when my son was playing high school football, and on every snap, I held my breath to make sure he didn't get injured. Because with Alex Smith, after seeing the gruesome leg injury that he had in 2018, you can't get that out of your head. And I can't process watching him play among the gladiators and forget about that scene and then everything that happened to him after that. So, look, the connection to Nagy makes sense. And I think Nagy is the reason why Russell Wilson's interested, because Russell Wilson wants to go somewhere where the offense is going to run through him like it does in Kansas City with Patrick Mahomes, which is where Nagy came from. But, you know, you look for these connections to try to make sense of the options, and I think there is some value in it. And maybe the value is having Alex Smith as a backup and a mentor to whoever the starter may be, and maybe he then transitions into a coaching role somewhere. He's always been a guy about whom teammates rave. When he was going through his rehab after that horrendous injury and the infections, and he almost died and he almost lost his leg, and you know, he was right there working with the quarterbacks 2019 in Washington, doing everything he could to support them. He was very supportive of Patrick Mahomes, who took his job. He was supportive of Colin Kaepernick, who took his job. I think he's a great presence. Is he the ideal starter at this point? Probably not. But I think there's value in having him on the team.
Oh, sure, there's value. That'd be great, Mike. But, I mean, they have a guy who already is that sort of mentor, and they're paying him. He's a $6.6 million cap hit in Nick Foles. I just don't know if, you know, practically it makes a lot of sense to invest as much money or hope in Alex Smith, who, if you're counting on him to be anything but a starter, you're exactly right. You're cringing every time he takes the field. So I don't know how two guys whose jobs are on the line, who's perceived to have their jobs on the line, goes into next season if Alex Smith is your starter.
Well, and really, for different reasons, neither guy, neither Alex Smith nor Nick Foles should be the starter. I mean, for Foles, I finally will admit that what he did in 2017 was some kind of crazy Slumdog Millionaire scenario where every needle that was presented to him, he managed to throw a thread through it, and it just was one after another, and he ends up winning the Super Bowl. Because every time he's had an opportunity to be a starter, what's happened? He falls flat on his face eventually. So let him be the backup. There's something magical about him entering the game as the injury replacement or the ineffective starter replacement. But he shouldn't be the starter. And for Alex Smith, for reasons we discussed, it's too nerve-wracking to see that guy out on a football field after what happened in 2018.
The Bears still haven't put the tag on the wide receiver, on Allen Robinson. They have another week before they have to do that, and we will hear something from them today. I don't know if we'll hear any actual information, but what do you think the delay is on that? And don't you have to – I mean, I get it. You get a draft pick next year if he leaves, but don't, if you're going to even do a trade and sign a trade, don't you have to put the tag on him at some point? What, there's no benefit in holding it up. I wonder what's going on.
Well, it's a deadline-driven business, and you never know where the bottom line is going to be from Allen Robinson's camp on a long-term deal. You hold that tag as long as you can. I just think that in the NFL, it's always better to wait. And the idea of a two-week window for applying the franchise tag, I think that's ludicrous. It should be one day. This is the day to apply the franchise tag. Either do it or you don't. We haven't seen one applied yet anywhere in the NFL. Now, one value in doing it is if other teams are tampering with your guy and you want to scare them off and you're going to do it anyway, just go ahead and do it and be done with it. But, you know, maybe there's value in having Allen Robinson's agent talking to these other teams to see what it would take on a long-term deal. You know, the problem is this: to do a tag and trade, first, the player has to sign the franchise tender. He's got to be on board with this. He's got to be on board with everything. He's got to sign the tender. And then the long-term deal that gets put in place of the tender is based on the franchise tender. It's very easy to calculate a long-term deal based on a franchise tag. You take the money the guy's due to make this year. You fully guarantee it. And then for most of these deals that are done, the second year is fully guaranteed at a 20% bump, because that's what the guy would get going year to year under the tag. So you have to find someone who's willing to do that and who also is willing to give the Bears whatever compensation they want. It's not easy to do. The Eagles were thinking about doing it with Nick Foles a few years ago when he was becoming a free agent. They said they were going to do it. Reportedly, it was leaked to ESPN or someone that they were going to do it. And then they realized no one was going to take on that franchise tag and turn it into a long-term contract and give the Eagles anything of value. So now's the time you explore all options. and they still have 6 days, 7 days, 4 p.m. Eastern next Tuesday to figure out what they're going to do.
Mike, this is a pretty broad question, big picture-wise, but without the NFL Combine, you know, how does that affect draft evaluation? Does it favor Power 5 schools who, you know, are, have the brand name and the label and maybe general managers and executives and scouts are going to trust? Or does it favor, you know, FCS prospects who might be playing now or go into the draft? And does it not matter at all that there is no combine? I'm just fascinated and curious about how this is affect the evaluation process that we spend so much time talking about.
Well, I think it definitely matters because the teams want that apples-to-apples opportunity to compare players against other players and also to compare this year's class against classes from past years on as many measurables as possible, even though there's no replacement for the film study. But you make a good point about the Power 5 conferences because the challenge when you're doing film study of a college football player is factoring in the quality of the opposition. There's a chance that that guy who got mauled as the defensive end ran past him to sack the quarterback five times in a game stinks and has no business being on a football field anywhere. You can't, and that's an extreme example, but the point is if you don't have a clear picture and confidence in the quality of the opposition, it's hard to understand how good the player is. And I think that makes it harder for the FCS prospects because they're going against lesser competition than what they would be going against if they were in one of the Power 5 conferences. So, yeah, I think that as scouts study the film, you're going to find a safe harbor in saying so-and-so did what he did against Alabama and Georgia and LSU and the other teams of the SEC. And so much of the pre-draft process, I'm convinced, is about covering your butt. So that's how you cover your butt. You know, you cover your butt with the numbers if they have the combines, and if they don't have a combine, you cover your butt by saying, well, you know, this guy did X and he faced superior talent, so he's the guy that I think we should lean toward.
Mike, we'll let you go. We've been talking about how you get a quarterback, and we've talked about do you have to put a package together to trade up. For the Bears, they're picking 20th. I believe Miami has two picks before the Bears get one. They have the third pick in the 18th. I would imagine Jacksonville uses their pick. Does the big trade-up begin with the Jets, or does it begin with Miami? And how far do you have to go if you actually want one of these players?
Well, you know, you got the Panthers in there at number 8 who are determined to find a franchise quarterback. David Tepper has made that clear, and they'd love to get Deshaun Watson, and I think they'd love to get all the way up to number 1 and get Trevor Lawrence if they could. Maybe they make the Jaguars an offer they can't refuse. But I think it's going to be active, and it may be that the Bears are too far down to do it, and what you'd have to give up to move up that far, why not just give up that same package and try to get Russell Wilson? You know, some people are saying the Bears aren't really in the Russell Wilson thing because they can't send a quarterback back to Seattle. But Seattle doesn't have to only get its quarterback from the team it trades Russell Wilson to. There are other ways to acquire quarterbacks. I just think that take is just kind of goofy that, well, you know, it would only be the Raiders because they have Derek Carr. Well, maybe they don't want Derek Carr. Maybe they want to find somebody else. So anyway, if I'm the Bears and I start thinking about what it would take to get from where I am into the upper echelon to get an unproven guy, I'd rather invest those picks or whatever else I need to throw onto the pile to get the proven guy from Seattle.
It's a great point. Mike, thank you. Always a joy. Appreciate it.
All right.
Thanks, Mike.
See you.
Yep.
That's Mike Florio. He makes a great point there, David. If you're going to put a package together, put it together for a guy that helps you win right now, not the next administration's quarterback.
If he is made available, absolutely, you're playing a smarter game if you go after a proven quarterback with all your draft capital that you're willing to part with. But if they're not available, that's when you have to pivot and say, what are we willing to do to move up to get a guy who is a definite maybe and buys us some time?
Oh, God. God, it's so much fun. I can't wait to hear him talk today. Also, can't wait to talk to Dan and Layla. We'll do that next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
Dan Bernstein.
And Layla Rahimi here.
Coming off 2020, the possible choices for the Tournament of Bad would be endless.
We've had enough bad. It's time to celebrate the great.
So we bring you the inaugural Tournament of Greatness,
where you determine who or what is the greatest of the great. Get involved. Selection Monday is March 15th, starting at 9 a.m.
So log on to 670thescore.com/greatness for all the info and to vote.
Listen starting Monday, March 15th, and be a part of the Bernstein and Rahimi Show Tournament of Greatness.
Only on Sports Radio 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station.
Brought to you by Humana, a more human way to healthcare.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!